You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 11th, 2020. And today I'm donating $5 to the Buy Myself a PlayStation Fund.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. Everyone, you know what the conversation that's happening right now is? The conversation that's happening right now is people are trying to manufacture a conversation about something that is really hard to talk about.
What are you talking about? Are you talking about people doctoring... like election fraud stories?
No, because that's not even a story, because it's a myth.
That's true.
I'm talking about, so we're in this weird time where we have these big consoles coming out.
Yes.
And then we have just a bunch of other stuff happening in the world. But the thing that would normally be this huge piece of news is kind of a very strange piece of news, because there's not a huge amount happening around the consoles other than their release.
Yes. It's a very, yeah, it's weird because there's not even something that you could, you know, put your hat on in terms of here is the big differentiator between these two systems. A lot of it is just like, these things do what they said they were going to do on the box. Which of these things do you want to do? It's to do the thing that you want. You know, of these two games that may or may not be exclusive for 6 months, which do you want to play more?
I mean, that is the thing where, you know, this is the week that the PS5 is coming out.
Yeah,
you know,
Thursday,
the Xbox tomorrow, Series X stuff, or wait, Series S and Series X. Like, all these reviews are hitting, and, you know, we're kind of going through them and trying to figure out, like, what is new, what is not new, what's going on, what's the kind of big thing that everyone is bringing. And I feel like this, more than most other big releases that I can think of, is people are very focused on the actual, like, hardware and software of these systems versus the games on them. And it's mainly because there's no games on them, you know? Like, there's very few new exclusive games on them at all. And so the reviews are actually kind of interesting to me, because how do you review a video game machine that doesn't have video games on it?
Yeah, it's very weird. I've read, at this point, I've probably read 6 different reviews of the PlayStation 5 and like a handful of Xbox reviews this week. And overwhelmingly, a lot of them are just pretty much absolutely fucking useless. Like, they just don't really serve a purpose, because they don't really tell you anything that is useful for you as a consumer about whether or not you want to buy something. You know, there are even articles out there. I think Polygon has one that's like, who should buy the PlayStation 5? And it has all these different use cases. But the answer is, for each one, is pretty simply, you know, do you have the money for it and you're into race racing? Go for it. You know, are you patient and can wait? Okay, maybe wait, right? It doesn't tell you anything new about that. And even from the perspective of reviewing the PlayStation 5 as a piece of hardware, part of it is a lot of the folks that spend their day in, day out reviewing video games or writing about video games from, you know, all of the popular blogs and websites that we frequent, from Kotaku and Waypoint and Polygon to Vice or what have you. A lot of the people who write reviews for the new consoles don't write hardware reviews. And a hardware review looks very different than a non-hardware review.
Right.
So the reviews that I thought most interesting or most pleasurable to read were from like Engadget or what's the website?
Is it Ars?
Ars Technica. Yeah, I didn't read Ars Technica. There was one, the folks who do all of the like frame rate tests.
Oh, Digital Foundry.
Yeah, Digital Foundry. Like, you know, those types of websites, those types of journalists are really good at writing technical hardware pieces of information. But those two are kind of useless, because the things that they're talking about in such great detail I like literally won't notice, you know, for one reason or another. Like, I'm just not paying attention to it. And, you know, while Frame It is really interesting and I, you know, I am passionate about 60 frames per second and having good frame, you know, high frame rate at 60 frames per second, right. But having good high fidelity and ray tracing. And so, like, I understand the technical issues where it's like, you know, if you're playing Spider-Man Miles Morales and you want to play at 60 frames per second, you cannot lock it at 60 frames per second and also have ray tracing active. Like, but that is a very minor quibble that most people won't notice or care about, you know?
Right.
And so it's
I feel like the people who are getting a PlayStation, the people that will care about that are the people that are buying this thing now.
Yeah.
You know?
But if they're buying it now, like, how useful are these reviews? Like, they knew they were going to buy it, right? Because the upgrade, the leap is night and day, right? Because we're not talking about – it's one of those weird things where when you're talking about a graphics card, unless you're talking about, like, NVIDIA's new line, which is, like, leaps and bounds above their last one, you're talking about relatively incremental upgrades. Like, technology moves pretty incrementally outside of the console cycles. And then when there's a console cycle, it's a huge leap. So if you're the person who's buying a new console day one, it's because you're a huge video game aficionado like ourselves, and you might care about some of this technical stuff, but the technical stuff is so secondary to it anyway because the leap from the PlayStation 4 to the PlayStation 5 is so immense, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the it's also – there's something about the constellation of technology that you have to have around these things, where do you have a 4K screen?
Yeah.
Do you have a screen that can handle, you know, 120 hertz? Do you have a screen that can handle HDR to make all that stuff look good? I feel like this, more so than pretty much any other big console launch, requires a technology ecosystem around it to really shine. I remember when I got a PS3, I still had an old, large CRT TV.
Sweet. And you still do, to this day. That's what he plays his PS4 on.
It would be so hilarious to, like, see our old TVs, you know, just to, to imagine them in our houses.
I have pictures from college when we would do, like, Halo. You don't remember? We did, like, 4v4? Yeah. Good times.
I mean, some of those, and those TVs served us well. Like, I had those for a long time, but during the, you know, the jump to the HD monitor era, you know, for the first month or two that I had a next-gen console, it was functionally useless on that TV because people hadn't figured out how to do the UI readable, and, you know, the icons were super small. Like, everything was really hard. And I kind of feel like this is that, but even greater, you know, like, you I mean, unless I got a good deal on one of those things, like, it'd be hard to justify me buying one until I buy a new TV, you know?
I mean, I would say that's true for HDR, but at least for 4K, like, you know, for the past 3 or 4 years, 4K has been pretty affordable. And I think if you've bought a TV within the last, I don't know, I would say 4 to 5 years, there's a pretty good chance that you bought a 4K TV.
I guess that's fair. Do you know if the... because for that other stuff, you need the, like, HDMI 2.1 spec or whatever. Has that been relatively...
That I don't know. Yeah, that I don't know. Yeah. If you're running... Yeah, I mean, all I know is that, like, you could go to Walmart Black Friday 4 years ago and get a TV that was, like, you know, $500 for a decently sized 4K TV. Of course, it wouldn't be the best. It's not going to be a top-of-the-line, like, OLED screen or what have you. But I think more and more people have it these days by default. Yeah. You're right, though. I mean, plenty of people haven't upgraded their TV in years. I still see CRTs out on the sidewalk here in Berkeley.
Every once in a while.
Yeah, it's like finding an antique gramophone or something. Like, what is this old Civil War memorabilia doing on the front porch?
It's just the fact that you have to kind of think about what spec standard the HDMI port is just suggests the level of granularity that you need to think about in terms of, do you invest in one of these consoles right now?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that we're having to think about the spec of our, you know, the ports on our TV and what caliber they are means that we've kind of entered this other, we've entered a different level of people who should or should not care about this.
Yeah. I mean, all that is to say, I don't think anyone is really reading PlayStation 5 reviews and letting that make up their mind.
Right.
You know? In the same way right. that I'm not convinced anybody watched the presidential debates and decide then and there who to vote for. You know?
Undecided console buyer.
Yeah, who is this undecided console buyer? I don't believe that for a second. Battle lines have been drawn, okay, everybody? Get ready for the real Civil War. I wonder what this sort of ecosystem will look like in terms of people who, you know, for the everyday video gamer, not the sort of gaming aficionados.
Yeah.
What does this look like in terms of the buy rate of this system? Like, are people just waiting until Call of Duty is available on it? Are they waiting through just the general like economic downturn? I mean, there's a lot of questions about what people can afford. And I know that that's been a major concern. We've talked about it. I'm sure Sony and Microsoft have talked about it, because even $500 is not cheap when you've lost your job for 7 months.
Exactly.
You know, and there's no sign of a new stimulus package coming. Well, right. I mean, maybe sooner now, but not as soon as many would like, right? So
I mean, we're still 2+ months away from the potential for anything like that. So it's like, oh, that's a tough in a launch window. You know, that's a tough thing.
So let's say a lot of people will be waiting, right? Like, what is the thing that's really going to convince you? Like, it's not, I mean, that's kind of why it's so weird to be seeing this bevy of PlayStation 5 reviews, because I'm not quite sure who they're for, you know?
Yeah.
If you're one of the lucky people that has a job that is secure right now of all times, you are a big video game nerd and you have a 4K TV and you have the money to spend and you manage to secure a pre-order, then you're set.
Right.
And if you're someone that's looking to get into it, you've probably already made up your mind already anyway. And I'm just not quite sure that these fulfill a purpose. So this is, I think, just the start of a weird cycle, you know, a weird few months in terms of next-gen stuff.
There are people, there's like a cut of people like me who skipped the pro, you know, who skipped the half step.
Yeah.
And you know, I still regularly play my PS4, but if I, for someone like me who skipped the half step, the PS5 is more intriguing because, you know, I know I'll be getting a bump on the games that I already will be playing. You know, like, I'm going to play Cyberpunk, so I might as well, you know, I might as well play it where it runs better, or I have, you know, better hardware to play it on. I'm going to continue playing, you know, games like Spelunky, or maybe go back to, you know, Ghost of Tsushima with the multiplayer, whatever. Like, so, like, and for me, you know, having that upgrade is more compelling because it's more of an upgrade. But if you already have a pro, then you're not thinking about the 4K. You're not thinking about you're not even thinking about simple things. Like, my PlayStation 4 is fucking loud and it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So, you know, even that would be a quality of life upgrade. So I wonder if there's a cut of people like me who skip that half step, and this actually, they're not even thinking about it as a PS5. They're just thinking about it as, oh, cool, a new PlayStation that will do everything that I need it to do and be a little bit better. You
right.
know, that I can justify it like that.
Right. And folks in your bracket, what do you want out of a review? Just confirmation that it does what it says in the box, right? Like,
I mean, that's the funny thing where it's, I find myself, you know, I know that there's, because I've been following this, I know that there's not a, you know, other than Demon's Souls, which is interesting, but again, I played the PS3 version, so it's more interesting in terms of like what they do to it. You know, the rest of the, you know, I'm not hugely into the sports stuff. I'm not a huge Devil May Cry fan. I mean, there's not a huge amount of stuff other than Bugsnax. I would like to play Bugsnax.
The system seller Bugsnax.
The system seller Bugsnax. But I start looking at a review where I kind of do want to know, is this thing quiet? You know, does it seem sturdy? Like, does this machine seem like it could last me 5+ years? Because that's kind of how I'm thinking about it, because there is a dearth of standout games.
Yeah.
And so when I see people talk about, oh, like this, I do actually kind of get interested in, you know, here's how we think the heating system is working. Cause like, that's the thing that's a real pain in my butt right now, you know, because the thing gets so warm.
Yeah.
Or, you know, is the controller that much more interesting? And, you know, it seems like there's a few cool things that they could be doing, but it's really more like, to your point, does it do what it says it's supposed to do? And then, you know, does it seem like there's legs on it, you know? Or is this something that I'm going to be staring down the barrel of, like, oh, it's the PS5 Pro in like 2 years and be annoyed that I bought this one, you know?
Yeah, I often think about that. Mostly because I often think about how gorgeous that Animal Crossing Nintendo Switch is, and it just makes me sad. Yeah. I can't justify buying multiple Switches. Yeah.
You live that multi-Switch household lifestyle. I'll tell you, it's a game changer. Dream. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's. How about you? I mean, definitely, like, you know, your TV is nicer than mine still because I haven't upgraded my TV for a few years, but, yeah. Like... what is it? Like Demon's Souls, I imagine, is the big draw.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally Demon's Souls. Like, you know, yeah. I've a lot of the reviews talk a lot about the two things that really stand out, I guess, would be the controller, because yes. The DualShock is a lot more refined than the last vibration, and allegedly it can make it feel like, you know, when you're walking on sand, it's so different than if you're being like punched in the face or something. So, I mean, fine. I mean, cool. I guess that's slightly more immersive. The other thing that people talk a lot about is load times. And I understand that because I'm the type of person that gets very impatient with long load times. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt in my mind that load times would be faster looking at the hardware. You know, so reading a review that says, you know, you're going to be loading into Bloodborne exactly 29 seconds faster than you were before. That's just a confirmation of what I already know, which is like, you know, better, faster hardware equals faster load times. Mm-hmm. It's not as though the thing that gets me to buy this is that extra 30 seconds, you know? I'm not jonesing to cut down load times so much that I wanted to, you know, have that be the thing that is selling me on the system.
Right. So, right. Yeah, I mean, and the stuff will be there, you know, like we didn't talk about this, but like a couple months ago, there was a completely meaningless teaser for the next God of War game. But it's coming. It's supposedly, I don't really believe this, it's coming out next year, where it's like, okay, cool. Like there's something to look forward to, even if it's not a day one thing. And like that will, I mean, and Sony's continuing strategy is to keep me in the ecosystem with things like God of War. Yeah. And so, you know, I know I'll be there at a certain point. It's just, you know, they're not really leading with anything. And Microsoft is the same way. Like it was so mind blowing when Halo got delayed from the launch, because then it's like, well, what, like who is buying these now?
Yeah.
I think their scenario makes a little bit more sense because of the S and how much cheaper it is. And
for sure,
you know, they didn't do, you know, by their own admission, they didn't do a great job this cycle. And so they're just basically resetting everything. So like that seems a little bit more understandable, at least.
You know, one thing I will actually give a lot of the websites credit for in the reviews of the PlayStation 5 is the general sense that they're downplaying the urgency for it. You know, there are very few sensationalist headlines that I've read for PlayStation 5 reviews. And a lot of it is like, wow, DualShock feels great, you know, but that's not exactly like, get this now or you'll miss out on the gaming's best year, right? I think there is a general understanding that times are tough for people. And look, the reality, especially with backwards compatibility and a lot of games this year coming out on both consoles, games coming out where they say, look, if you buy the PlayStation 4 version, when you upgrade, if and when you choose to upgrade, you'll get the PlayStation 5 version for free on top of your main purchase. Yeah. It means that people can really take their time getting into it. And I think the idea that, look, this isn't a race. There's no winning. Yeah. You don't need to have a PlayStation 5 to enjoy some of the best aspects of video games this year. So, you know, maybe take it slow. Maybe think about it. Maybe just make good financial decisions. Maybe think about whether or not you want to be poning up for the latest hardware right now.
Right.
Or do you want to wait it out? And I'm glad that there's that sense of restraint rather than just sort of being shills for the hardware.
Right. I mean, we'll we may or may not, both of us may or may not have one of these things in the coming months, and, yeah. and I guess we will see.
But probably not next week is my guess.
Yeah. It will be, I just kind of wonder who has it next week. I mean, based off of like all the NVIDIA stuff, is it just a bunch of robots? Did the robots buy all the PS4s already?
I have to assume. What actual people, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of restraint, let's talk about, before we end, let's talk about a very strange article or a very strange phenomenon that we saw, which is people restraining their viewers, streamers restraining their viewers' ability to donate and putting caps on the donations.
Yeah.
Like Pokimane led this, right? Like she was the one, or I don't know, I'm sure multiple people have done this, but this was the one that caught the news.
I mean, certainly she's the most high profile person to have done this. Because, you know, if you're not super familiar with Twitch, and I assume most everyone listening to is, you can just straight up make cash donations to your favorite streamers, often for an opportunity to get a shout out on their live stream. And sometimes they'll even have like highest paying person this month. So there's like a leaderboard for who is donating the most money. I have been in chats where people are donating hundreds of dollars. Yeah. And I'm not watching streams like this isn't, you know, Mr. Beast giving a car away. Like there are random people out there who donate a huge amount of money. I think we've even talked on the podcast in the past about folks who have gotten divorces and used their life savings spending on creators where people have been really vocal about having issues with it. So it was interesting to see that Pokimane, one of the highest profile streamers on Twitch, set that cap because that's quite a bit of money, right? Like if someone is donating $50, $100, $200, and you're capping it at $5, that's a huge amount of money that's not coming into your bank account every month. She'll be fine because she's huge and already a millionaire as a result of Twitch. But it is interesting that I think more and more, especially of the higher tier streamers and maybe putting a cap on that, I like to think out of just good positive will towards their community and not wanting to fleece people or really feel like they're encouraging people to make poor financial decisions.
I mean, that's the most altruistic way of looking at it is, to your point, I mean, she's made her money. I mean, she's good, you know, assuming that there's no strings attached to the money, like she's a millionaire a few times over now. And so it does feel like there's a way, okay, now that I don't have to worry about myself and my theoretical children or grandchildren someday, how can I make sure that people who are not in a great space don't accidentally make a bad choice? And, you know, this is a good way of doing it. And I mean, I, you know, I'm not trying to like paint with a broad brush around like people who watch people on Twitch because I do too, right? I mean, everyone does. But I feel like there's a certain profile of people that make bad decisions thinking that like, oh, if I give some money, these people will know who I am or like I'm somehow contributing to them or it fills some void that they're feeling. And this seems like a way of trying to blunt that damage a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the hard reality is that there are a lot of people who just do not, maybe don't understand the repercussions or maybe from a sensation perspective, it's more akin to gambling when they're making those types of donations.
Yeah.
And the way that Twitch is built, and I think the way that a lot of streams showcase donations makes it, and the way that they talk about those donators as parts of these larger communities, I do think that there's very real pressure to be continuing to donate if you want to be part of that sort of elite group, right? There is a sense that you're part of that group above and beyond just the subscriptions that you already pay for it. So, I mean, I'm glad that they're addressing it, although it certainly doesn't address it from any sort of larger Twitch perspective. I do think it's interesting also from Twitch's perspective, and I wonder if there's any amount of concern when creators of that size are saying, don't donate more than $5 to me. If you want to donate, donate somewhere else. You know, Pokimane specifically has, I think, some nonprofit organizations that she encourages folks to donate to should they want to put their money towards a good cause above and beyond the $5 they've donated to her channel, which is great. And I'm sure a lot of people at Twitch think that's a great idea and love that, but that's also money that's not going back towards Amazon. And if there's anyone in the world that wants more money, it's Jeff Bezos. So
Jeffy B has to Jeffy get his Beezy, cut.
I'm sure needs his cut. So I do think it's interesting to see, you know, whether or not that's a sort of, I don't know, like an ethical trend or like a larger scale streamer trend towards trying to funnel some of that money, if not horizontally to other streamers, just outwardly, just outside of the Twitch environment.
I mean, I feel like it would be cool to codify that in the platform where you could say, yeah, donate as much as you want to me, but X percentage of it is always going to go to this charity, or X percent of it is going to go to this, you know, blind box of up and coming streamers or whatever, it would be cool if, because I mean, it's great to say like, oh, I'm going to cap it here and then go donate somewhere else if you want to. But the whole point is that there's some sort of, because people like watching the channel and they like her, there's a frictionlessness to wanting to donate to her specifically that I think is a powerful, it would be powerful to redirect that frictionlessness to another cause immediately versus having people have to take one more action to go find someone to donate to.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool if like, and that's another way for Twitch or Amazon to kind of recapture some of the income that they're not seeing, which is, sure, we'll let you divvy up your donations however you want and make it super easy, and we'll just take, you know, 1% of it or whatever. So it's like, yeah, I'll donate $100, but like, you know, Pokimane's going to see $5. The ACLU is going to see X dollars. Like, you know, the independent or the like underrepresented Twitch streamer channels are going to receive X dollars. Like, versus having to rely on me to go search all that stuff. Like, they could easily put it into the platform, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like a Humble Bundle style
thing. I was just going to say, I've always really enjoyed how when you make a purchase via Humble Bundle, they give you a slider to decide how much goes to Humble, how much goes to the creator, and how much goes to that nonprofit of choice when you're making it. Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
And streamers could easily have the power to lock their cut, where it's like, sure, you can use the sliders, but I'm locking my slider at $10 or whatever. Like, you're not going to be able to go above that. So, you know, figure it out or just use the default after that, you know? Yeah.
I mean, I think both you and I question how the dubious nature of philanthrocapitalism as a whole, but it's a weird thing, because while I don't know what the correct answer is in this case regarding Pokimane or Twitch, what I can say is that the Twitch environment is a very weird one because it's so very top heavy, where you have these streamers who make a huge amount of money that for the most part isn't redistributed towards smaller streamers that really carry the brunt of viewership and just straight up dollars from viewers. And they're kind of like, I mean, they are celebrities in their own right, and what they do and how the money is distributed and how to change an ecosystem such that you can spread the wealth a little bit, that's a big old question mark. But I think it's a big old question mark that it is worth thinking about, and it's worth certainly Twitch thinking about in a sort of broader perspective. Hopefully a decision like what Pokimane is doing might sort of bring that more to the forefront and incentivize them to really kind of spread out where these views are going towards, right? Because part of what she's saying is like, look, I'm big enough. I don't need any more, you know?
Right.
Very strange things to hear in this day and age, in the year 2020.
Yeah, exactly. When someone who's just not pure avarice.
Yeah, that is just not the manifestation of greed. So good for her.
I wonder if that will does that also incent Twitch to compensate their streamers in a more direct way? If streamers are going to start kind of doing this weird thing of purposefully minimizing a certain revenue stream that the platform might get, it's like, okay, well, then we have to deal with you more directly to kind of understand how much you're going to be streaming, how much we're going to be paying you. Like, I wonder if that is a thing, that because they can rely less on the community aspect and they have to deal more directly with the person and the people, which in my mind is probably a little bit better. Yeah.
I wish there was a better way of knowing how effective this is, you know? Like, I hope she has tracking links on her donation buttons and stuff.
Right.
Like, per your comment or your idea about splitting funds above $5 to like other charity or other causes. I would just love to see how effective that is. You know, maybe this is something that can be pushed forward. And certainly you should feel better about enjoying the streams of creators that are being so active about giving back and not taking more than they need off the top, I guess.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure she has more than she needs.
Yeah. I want to see that. It sounds like she partnered with a lot, I guess most of the big streamers use Streamlabs, like the software to like manage their streams and stuff. It sounds like maybe Streamlabs is handling some of that logic behind the scenes. Maybe they could add that into that side of the platform.
Yes, indeed.
All right. I think we'll leave it there for now. We'll start, George and I will just be sitting here hovering over the purchase orders of PS5s and deciding how much we
it's sad truth.
And then the robots will get them anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
Yep.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints.net is our website. We don't take donations either, but you can come out and find our podcasts wherever you find podcasts: iTunes, Stitcher, you know the drill, Spotify. We out here
everywhere. All right. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.